Welcome, true believers. Shonorama here. We're with part two of the history of cinema, as it were. For Marvel movies, DC movies, the countdown to Batman v Superman. So here's what here's where we left off. Last time we were talking about how the evolution of comic book movies came to be, and you know what happened, and you know what was where and what came first, and how things kind of fit together, progressed. But anyway, so we ended off last time to talk about when this independent film came out called Iron Man by a small studio called Marvel Studios, and we're gonna cover today where that put everything. So here's what happened. When Iron Man came out, they made a really good movie. They took a lot of gambles and they put out a film that ended up redefining comic book movies forever. Here was a movie that was fresh with a character that wasn't as well known. I think the recognition factor on Iron Man was probably pretty low, probably in the 60% range or less. Could be wrong, don't quote me on this, but it was nowhere near up to the level of a Spider-Man or a Batman or Superman, contrary to what it is now. I think Iron Man now probably has a better recognition factor than most heroes, you know, possibly even larger than Wolverine in some respects. So, but back then, Iron Man was a very D-level character. And when the movie came out, it just blew the doors off everything. And Marvel was able to, on that film alone, Marvel Studios was able to, you know, be a fully functioning entity that could back itself and could foster its own deals. So what they did is they somehow got the partial rights back for the Hulk, because the Hulk was owned by Universal, I believe. So they were able to get some of those rights back for the Hulk, and they made a movie called The Incredible Hulk, unlike the self-titled Hulk that had Eric Bana in it by director Ang Lee. So this really changed things to show that Marvel as a brand was beginning its ascendancy into movie history. Okay, sorry, I just drifted off there for a second. So now they are in a position to make more movies. The Incredible Hulk came out. The Incredible Hulk did basically just as well as the Ang Lee Hulk had, but one thing that kind of got dismissed, you know, from the viewership and stuff was the original Hulk started really, really strong. It had one of the best box office openings of all time, because it was, you know, the next film after Spider-Man. And then petered very, very quickly. The Incredible Hulk had a bit more legs than the Incredible Hulk had more legs than the Ang Lee Hulk. Anyway, so I drifted off again. I'm going to have to do a little bit of editing here, I think. So The Incredible Hulk came out, and it was actually a really good movie. And in this film, now let's go back. Kevin Feige was a big fan of Back to the Future. And when Back to the Future came out, they filmed episodes 2 and 3 simultaneously. And what happened at the end, because they'd filmed both of them at the same time, when they released the second film, Back to the Future 2, they had the trailer for Back to the Future 3 at the end of the credits, an end of credit sequence. It might have been the first one of its kind, or one of the first ones of its kind, so very, very interesting. So what happened at the end of Iron Man, there was a teaser at the end, and they brought Sam Jackson in, Samuel L. Jackson in, to be Nick Fury. The back history of that was, that is not what Nick Fury looks like in the Marvel Universe, but Marvel had an offshoot universe called the Ultimate Universe, And in that one, the Avengers were far more gritty, far more based in reality in this, you know, Facebook age. And what happened, what they did is there was a comment made in the Ultimates, like the Avengers, but in the Ultimate Universe, they changed the Nick Fury to look exactly like Samuel L. Jackson. So when they went about making the movie, they went with the Ultimate version because, I mean, it's very, very simple casting. In fact, there's a joke within the Avengers Ultimate comic book where Nick Fury makes a statement that, oh yeah, I hear they're going to cast Sam Jackson in the movie as me. And that's happened in reality, which is really, really interesting. So anyway, so there's an end credit, end sequence at the back of it, and I think that went really viral. What happened at the end of Incredible Hulk, there was a sequence as well, and in that one, Tony Stark was in the end sequence. So they just quickly established that there was a contained universe here going on, that, you know, Iron Man wasn't separate from the Incredible Hulk. I mean, those were the only two properties that were out at the time, so there was no intention to have a joined universe, but what they had done is they said, yeah, you know, this is all the same universe. They may not cross over in each other's movies, but, you know, here's just kind of a more of an Easter egg or a teaser, but it wasn't necessarily gospel that, hey, we're going to make a movie later, and then there's a hint at the Avengers. Well, logical sense is you get the Hulk. Hulk was in the, he lasted, I think, 2 issues as an Avenger, but he was in the first iteration of the Avengers. He was in the first lineup of the Avengers, and so was Iron Man, for that matter. So, I mean, they had 2 characters, both were Avengers, they each had their own movie, they couldn't touch Spider-Man, or the X-Men, or the Fantastic Four, for that matter. There's lots of things they couldn't touch because they were kind of stuck at other studios, or in, you know, in rights limbo. So, people went crazy for it. It was like, oh my god, like, they might actually have a movie where there's a team-up or something, you know, or maybe they're, lo and behold, maybe there'd be an Avengers movie someday. And that started to gain some real steam to the point that, I don't think Marvel had intended it that way, but it's like, holy crap, we could actually probably pull this off. So the Hulk made its money back. I thought it was a very, very good film. So what happened after that, I mean, Iron Man 2 was greenlit very quickly because, you know, Iron Man 1 did so well. Hulk did good, but not what they, you know, not what they kind of hoped. So, you know, let's jump on the, let's get an Iron Man 2 out there and get it done. And while that was happening, they put into production, well, kind of during kind of this whole general time, they put into production a Captain America movie and a Thor movie. Now, Captain America was a more popular character than Iron Man in the comics at the time. Thor was kind of at the same level as Iron Man. He was maybe a C-level instead of a D-level character. He had held his own title for a long time, but he also had, you know, a Tales to Astonish, which, you know, wasn't necessarily a Thor title, but he was in it a lot. Just like Tales of Suspense had Iron Man in it. And in fact, Iron Man might have been in the other Tales as well. I'm not really sure. But anyway, the strength of both those characters was like, well, we can't really make a movie. But with Captain America, it was like there was a popularity thing going on. And then with Thor, well, at least it was something different that on the screen could look really, really, really good. So they went ahead and started making those 2 movies. And when those movies came out, I believe Captain America did better than Thor. Thor actually had Kenneth Branagh in it, which was really, really impressive. He actually directed the film, and that, I mean, that, wow, what a coup. So they're actually starting to get some prime talent, and they got Sir Anthony Hopkins in there. Had Renee Russo, who, you know, who's a very well-regarded actress, and Natalie Portman, you know, like, they had some really interesting cast in there, and Stellan Skarsgård, and you know, it was like, oh, you're, you know, you're really pulling some talent together. So it was very, very interesting. Captain America, you know, had a few names in there. They're awesome as well. Now, Captain America had a more direct tie-in to an Avengers film, and I think that might have helped how it was going to do. But again, we saw end sequences, end of credit sequences again. So kind of brought a new dynamic that, well, we kind of want to see the next Marvel film because it's going to have a tie-in to something else that we might want to see, and we don't know what that is. So it kind of raised an interest in the Marvel films as a whole. But I think at this point, Captain America did pretty good, and Thor did pretty good. But, I mean, it wasn't the boffo box office that Iron Man was. Iron Man just clicked on every single cylinder for a very wide audience. While Captain America Thor might have been a bit too specific of an audience. But nonetheless, Marvel was on a roll and they were making decent movies. Far better than anything they'd done in the past. My personal opinion is, Thor, the first Thor and the first Captain America were phenomenal films. I really enjoyed them, but I could understand why it might have catered too much to comic book fan and not enough towards a general audience. I can understand that. So what happened during that time, DC still putting out their Batman movies, and then you know, they're talking, okay, we're going to do there was a Superman Returns kind of in and around. There's a timeline where Superman Returns came out, which was done by Bryan Singer, who left the X-Men franchise and wanted to make a Superman film, and made the Superman film, and it made good money, but it didn't, it wasn't astonishing like they had hoped. And the audiences, I mean, by and large, were not as impressed. Despite everything that went into the film, they found a Christopher Reeve lookalike. Brandon Routh, you know, who did his best imitation of Christopher Reeve, and it was Superman Returns was meant to be a sequel to Superman 2, and kind of ignoring the rest of the continuity within the movies. It was a very bold move, and it could have hit ridiculously huge, but it just it was missing something. It was a little too dour and a little too sad and a little too dark. But nonetheless, that's what they were doing. So as we're progressing forward, Marvel moves into what they call their Phase 2. So we're seeing a Captain America 2. We're seeing an Iron Man 3. Iron Man 2 had already come out. And it did really well based on the expectation. But again, this time audience were like, well, you know what? It wasn't as good as the first. And then, so Iron Man 2 was a bit of a letdown. Then we saw there was a Captain America 2, there was a Thor 2. Hulk, they decided not to make another movie because it's, I don't know if it would seem too risky a venture. But it didn't happen. But there was other plans for the Hulk down the road. But I can't remember the timeliness of this, but or the timing of this, but we'll just say that. Let's try to think back. Superman Returns came out, and then, yeah, you know what? I can't remember the timeline there. But anyway, regardless, what had happened was Iron Man 2 was a bit of a letdown. Iron Man 3 pulled out all the stops and had some incredible, incredible sequences. It was going to be the final film with Robert Downey Jr. And Captain America 2 came out. Now, here's what happened. There was no, I think because after Thor, the first Captain America, I think the expectations by an audience was that Captain America 2 was going to be okay. Thor 2 was going to be okay, just because the first ones were okay for the general audience. I thought they were phenomenal, but somehow Marvel really kicked it up. They created an interest in a second Captain America movie, by changing things up. Just like Iron Man 2 did, I guess Iron Man 2 had Black Widow in, and that was kind of the extra, and they had the villain of Whiplash, or whatever you want to call him, which was the Mickey Rourke character, and they had Justin Hammer in there, and, you know, they had a lot of stuff going on. Captain America 2 pretty much did the same thing, but it seems like the execution was a little bit better, and the world threat seemed to be better, and the story was tighter. In Captain America 2, like, Captain America 1, you had the Red Skull, which I think it left a lot of people like, oh, and we're done with the Red Skull. Like, it just seemed a little too quick, and I don't know, it just wasn't hitting the way I guess it needed to. But in Captain America 2, they had Batroc, which was a classic cheesy villain from the comic books, which they reinvented and reinvigorated by casting George St. Pierre, the famous UFC fighter, in the role. And all of a sudden, this guy, and he is a secondary villain in this film, which is crazy. But then they have the introduction of Crossbones, and then they have this whole thing with S.H.I.E.L.D. S.H.I.E.L.D. was really, really tied into this film a lot, and there was a lot going on. And then they had the Falcon, and then they had Winter Soldier, and they really amped it up, and the script was really tight, and the action sequences were really, really good, and I think Chris Evans really had really figured the role out at this point. Like, he really, really had it figured out. So what happened was there was this hype after the Avengers had come out. So I guess my chronology is a little wrong there. So the Avengers had come out, reunited all these heroes. So now, even though the first films did well, there was a somewhat lack of interest in sequels to these. They may not have done as well. But after Avengers came out, and Avengers blew the doors off and became, I believe, the third highest grossing movie of all time at the time, it was like, holy crap, all of a sudden, everything has changed. The whole game has changed. So, because of the success of Avengers, there was interest in second films. So, Iron Man 3... dealt with the consequences of Avengers. So Iron Man 3 had a direct tie-in to the aftermath of Avengers. Captain America 2 had a direct aftermath by introducing characters and having S.H.I.E.L.D. a lot more involved, because S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, brings the Avengers together. And, you know, there was a greater S.H.I.E.L.D. presence. And there was a major Hydra presence, which was, you know, they talked about it in the first Captain America movie. And just really took over things in the second film. And then the same thing with Thor. There was bigger stakes. And I think off the power of Avengers, the second films of these characters did better. But the difference was, especially with Captain America, like, surprised a lot of people. Like, well, we're going to see it because we just saw Avengers. But to the audience, it was a better film than the first. It captured a grander, wider audience this time. And now it's like, okay, you know what? The second film's good. Everybody wants to see the third film now. I think Thor kind of performed similarly to the first film. It was better in a number of respects. For a general audience, even though I really, really liked the first... Like, I love all the movies, but... I think it was a bit more widely accepted. They really amped up the Kat Dennings thing, which a lot of casual fans that enjoyed the first Thor. But Thor did well on different fronts for different reasons. It had a larger female audience than perhaps some of the other films, because Chris Hemsworth ended up just being a god to women. And, you know, he was the handsome guy that, you know, all the women just love. So they really, really, the marketing behind Thor was really, really well thought out. It had all those romance aspects that are popular with a female audience that brought in a more varied audience, which was really, really smart marketing. So those people came out for Thor 2. And for Captain America, I mean, it was the aftermath of Avengers, and it felt like a continuation of the Avengers movie in a way. So, I mean, that brought the audience there. And I think Captain America, The Winter Soldier, the second film, overperformed. It really surprised people with how good it was. So during this time, DC has decided they're going to relaunch Superman yet again. So they had the Brandon Routh film, which was basically Superman 3, or a continuation of the original Christopher Reeve films. And it was a new part 3 in a way, where the actor looked like Christopher Reeve. So they decided to revamp Superman yet again, and decided to call the film Man of Steel. They did a heavy casting call trying to find the people they needed. They brought Zack Snyder in to do it, who had previously done the Watchmen movie for DC, which, again, it did pretty good money, but it didn't connect with the audience the way that DC expected it to. But I think they really, really liked Zack's flair and his visual style, and they thought it could really, really apply very well to the DC universe. So when Man of Steel came out, I think it really surprised a lot of people. It was very, very dark. It fit more in the tone of the Batman movies, and it was the first film after the Batman trilogy was done. And at this point, I think DC, their plans might have been, okay, we'll put out a Batman movie and we'll do 3 movies. Then we'll put out a Superman movie, we'll do 3 movies. And then maybe we'll do another character, but we're not really sure. There was a certain lack, there was a definite lack of certainty from DC in what they wanted to do. They're very picky on what they're going to do, and they're very hesitant to jump into other franchises. And just when they had the confidence to try another franchise, they did so. They did so with Green Lantern, and Green Lantern flopped really badly. It was a poorly developed film with, I think, too much studio involvement, too much need to put everything in the film, just like they did with Spider-Man 3, and just like they did with X-Men 3. They just, like, we're going to put everything in here. I could probably cover this in a separate podcast, but very, very quickly, I think with Green Lantern is such, the Green Lantern universe, like just the aspect of the comics is so huge, that to introduce everything about Green Lantern all in one film, I think is too much, is too overwhelming. I mean, the Green Lantern Corps and all these various characters that, weren't really around initially, they were just backstory filler at the time. I mean, Green Lantern was a guy that inherited a power ring, and if they could have kept it as that in the first film, with hints of, where the ring is from and all that sort of stuff, I think they could have gone further. Keep the story nice and simple, get to know the character, and then move on. The casting of Ryan Reynolds, I don't know if was a good move. I don't think Ryan Reynolds is a bad actor, but the choice of how they wanted to portray Hal Jordan, Green Lantern, was a little bit off. So anyway, regardless to say, DC had also put out a Catwoman movie before that, which failed and became voted one of the worst films of all time, or one of the worst films of all time. Green Lantern had that status as well. So we're seeing a track record that, well, maybe we better stick with the big two, Superman and Batman, and, stick with what we know best. And which really disappointed fans, because, DC is not a two-comic company, or two-character company. They do have a lot of great, interesting characters. They just have to figure out how to realize it. So, so they did Man of Steel, and Man of Steel did better. It did solid. There were criticisms of it, and interestingly enough, the next film they decided to do, which is the next film that's coming up in the slate of comic book movies, is Batman v Superman, and it almost seems like a direct result of that film. of the Man of Steel film. A lot of the things that people complained about in Man of Steel, Superman, you know, spoiler alert, but Superman does something at the end of the film that a lot of people question, you know, that this, what he does at the end of the film changes his character and does not fit in with the morality of who Superman is. And there's been a lot of back and forth discussion. The people that really liked Man of Steel really liked it, and the people that didn't like it for, there's a few things in the film that they completely disagreed with, and it ruined the whole film for them, unfortunately. I've gone back, and I can look at it with a grain of salt and realize that it is a good movie. Yes, they change a couple of the tropes around, but every comic book movie has done so. So, anyway, in Batman v Superman, it's almost like they took the criticisms that they'd received. And, I mean, I haven't seen the film yet. It hasn't come out. But based on the trailers, it is dealing with the repercussions of Man of Steel. And the disdain that people had for Man of Steel is the disdain that Batman Bruce Wayne feels towards Superman. Very interesting way to look at it. And recasting Batman with Ben Affleck is an interesting move. Now that he's gained, you know, he's stepped up from where he was. Very interesting. But before we get to that phase, in the meantime, Avengers has come out. Avengers Age of Ultron has come out. The second Avengers film. So all of a sudden, oh, we get this great big Marvel Universe. Marvel Studios is doing fine. Every single one of their films has opened at number one thus far. They've all done awful box office. Even the quote-unquote weakest of their films has done awful box office. So, and they all just make more money than they did before. So they're all doing really, really well. So Avengers 2 comes out. It introduces new characters. They're really flipping things on their head. But here's where things change for Marvel. It's like, okay, we can't just... And this is what I really, really admire. If they followed the DC model and they put out just Captain America and Iron Man and Thor and just stuck with those, and we'll forget about the Hulk because, you know... The DC formula, okay, well, we had hits with those movies, we'll just make more of those, and that's it. But they decided, you know, we can't rely on those three characters to carry us through. They introduced characters in Avengers that may or may never see their own solo films, but they may not have the strength to carry their own films, or, you know, there just may not be the time to do so. But to give them expanded roles in the Avengers movie or in other characters' films, like they did with Black Widow, who's had a really interesting arc over many movies, is at least gives other characters a chance to shine, getting them on the big screen without necessarily breaking the bank and making a movie that might not do as well. All the while this is happening, Marvel now takes big chances. They're putting out a movie called Guardians of the Galaxy, and they're putting out a movie called Ant-Man. Now, Ant-Man, if we want to talk about lower-level characters, Ant-Man, even though he's a mainstay of the Marvel Universe and has been there since the first issue of Avengers, and might even have predated it a little bit, I believe in Tales to Astonish, or Tales of Suspense, one of those titles, Ant-Man is still, like, never really made the big time in terms of popularity. So, you know, why would you make an Ant-Man movie? And then, Ant-Man is often the butt of jokes. I mean, there was even a parody skit in Saturday Night Live back in the 70s or early 80s where they mocked Ant-Man. Everybody made fun of him. And interestingly as well, like, so the Guardians of the Galaxy was this talking raccoon and a talking tree in it. Like, just recipes for failure, really. How are you going to... You had trouble corralling an audience around Thor, Captain America. People wanted to see it, but they really stepped up the game to make those good franchises within a shared universe. But you're really asking the audience for a lot if Guardians of the Galaxy and Ant-Man are going to succeed. So what do? You just bring in good people like you have on every other Marvel film thus far and make it work. Make it be about the characters. Make it be about the story. The Guardians of the Galaxy, they expect it, you know, to break even, make a little bit of money on, you know, they'll make revenue in DVD sales or Blu-ray sales and whatnot, and it'll do great. You know, it'll do enough. But they wanted to do this film. And they make the film. And Guardians of the Galaxy satisfies expectations in a way none of the other Marvel films could. It had everything about that film was everything that none of the other Marvel movies had done. It was interesting, it was new, it was different, it was funny, but it wasn't campy. It was it had different types of action sequences, completely different types of characters. We're not seeing a standard Boy Scout character in every single one of these films. We're seeing a variety. And again, Guardians is a group film, much like Avengers is. Or much like, I should say, much more like a Fantastic Four would be. So, and it succeeds beyond expectations, and it's much loved by everybody. And it just goes to show, if you make a good movie, people will come. Word of mouth will get out there. Guardians did astonishingly well. And everybody talks about it. In fact, even on the toy front, toy demand could not keep up with the movie. So, and then Ant-Man came out, which everyone expected, okay, well, this is going to be, okay, Guardians, okay, you know, we'll give it to them that they figured out how to reach their audience, and the audience loved it, but they can't do it with Ant-Man. It's just impossible. And Ant-Man exceeded expectations again, maybe not at the level of Guardians of the Galaxy, because I think some people were kind of, well, I don't know, but everyone that saw it, it got an amazing rating, exit poll ratings and everything else, and again, a very good movie, very smart, well directed, well written, well acted. I mean, they had caliber characters in there. They also had Ant-Man did something that hadn't happened in any other movie as well, by having a character like Paul Rudd is way different than Chris Evans or Robert Downey, a completely different type of character. And the humor in it was funny, but it grounded the movie in a realism that maybe the other movies didn't have. It was a very brilliant movie, and they were able to use the whole aspect of changing your size and making it just be really freaking cool. So, succeeded. So now they've introduced two new movie franchises that are just going to do amazing. And yeah, the other thing that Ant-Man did that no other movie had done is they actually, because Ant-Man has been two different characters in the comics, they were able to meld those two into a very unique way and still keep people, you know, longing for Hank Pym Ant-Man versus Scott Lang Ant-Man, and really make it work in a very interesting way that was different than the comic dynamic. That was actually really well thought out and worked really, really, really well. So, anyway, during this time, so kind of like we'll backtrack a little bit, there were two Fantastic Four films that were put out, not under the banner of Marvel Studios, but under Fox, and these movies did well. They probably did as well as the first Captain America, first Thor, in terms of the number of people that went to see it and stuff. But the general consensus by the audience was, well, this wasn't actually really that good. It was cheesy, it was hokey. There was a lot of good things to it. One of them being Chris Evans as Human Torch, which was very interesting. But because it wasn't under the Marvel Studios banner, and Fantastic Four movie rights are not owned by Marvel Studios, well, it didn't really matter if they cast the same actor. In a way, it was almost a way of sticking your thumb up at snubbing Fox, who had the rights. And but anyway, so throughout all this, let's see, so there was the Wolverine movies came out, kind of spin-offs of the X-Men franchise. The first X-Men did boffle box office and quickly declined in a similar fashion to the first Hulk movie. And people are just like, wow, this is just shite. So, very interesting time. So, anyway, after all said and done, we are entering into a phase 3 of Marvel, and they're making announcements for all these movies that they're going to be making. And now, with the, on the strength of Guardians of the Galaxy and the strength of Ant-Man, how, okay, look, Marvel makes good movies. This is a brand. This is not about the actors. This is not about the writers. This is a combination of all factors. Marvel puts out good movies, and they put a lot of quality people into them. And it's not just one thing that makes their movies great. It's the whole studio as a whole putting everything together. So, under the strength of those two films, and the juggernaut that's Avengers, they had leeway to make some movies that were a bit riskier, that, well, maybe they won't make money, but they'll expand the catalog of Marvel and keep the brand out there. But they were making money on every single film, and making good money on every single film. And each film did, you know, better than the one before, sort of thing. So they announced a whole spat of other things. Doctor Strange, Captain Marvel, Black Panther, there's still talk of an Inhumans movie. So there's all this other stuff coming down the pike. And Marvel can see they do no wrong. They have no fear of introducing a new property. No fear whatsoever. They're doing everything on their terms, and they're going to do well. During this whole large process, DC is, you know, they're making their Batman versus Superman film. Batman v Superman film. And it's getting to the point that, you know, having a shared universe, shared movie universe, makes sense. It really, really works. So as Batman v Superman started to change and evolve, and the reason Batman was going to be in the second Superman film, which is really what this was originally intended to be, was, I don't know if Zack Snyder was dared, you know, to do it. He kind of make a general statement that everyone jumped on and said, well, you're doing this now, and then all of a sudden he has to do it. And he's like, well, I'm going to do it, you know, and I'm going to make it work. He brings in David Goyer, who worked on all three Batman films, you know, to flesh something out, and they still have Christopher Nolan in there in some capacity as a producer, that they're going to make this work. But as they're going along, well, let's add Wonder Woman. Well, let's do... All of a sudden, now we're leading towards a Justice League film, and all the characters are going to be introduced, and Warner Brothers is finally making a gamble. But there was a lot of delay in getting there, and like, well, we're, you know, dragging their feet, like, well, I don't know, we'll just stick with Batman and Superman. Now they've embraced the Wonder Woman thing. They get, of course, backlash, because anything DC does, or Marvel does, gets backlash. And then the movie comes out and everyone's happy, I guess, in general. So, I think Wonder Woman is tracking, like, there's a lot of interest in Wonder Woman and who she is. They hated the actress, but now everybody seems to be on board with the actress. And then a picture was released of Aquaman that talked, well, we might do an Aquaman movie, and everyone's like, oh, Aquaman. You know, on par with Ant-Man as being viewed as one of the lamest heroes. But they cast Jason Momoa, who just come off a huge success with Game of Thrones, and he'd also portrayed Conan in the Conan revisited movie, and they put a picture out of Jason Momoa as Aquaman. Well, all of a sudden, because Jason Momoa looks like a badass, and he's going to play Aquaman? What? The picture comes out of it, and everyone is like, this is awesome. So now, all of a sudden, there's talk that Aquaman might be in this Batman v Superman movie. The Flash, a new Green Lantern. I can't remember who else I mentioned, maybe Martian Manhunter, I'm not sure. I mean, there's a lot of rumor, a lot of conjecture, and then there's kind of fact that's put out there, but I don't know how factual the fact is. But anyway, a whole bunch of, like, it really, all of a sudden, DC is making a whole bunch of movies. And I'm not really paying attention, because, I mean, there's been so much hyperbole about, oh, well, you know, DC's going to make a Wonder Woman movie, and it never happened, and, oh, they're going to make a Green Lantern movie, and it finally happened, but then it didn't do well, so now they're going to be gun-shy. That all of a sudden, now, there is a Wonder Woman movie, and as I'm checking in, the Batman v Superman's coming sooner, and I'm really thinking this Batman v Superman's going to be a one-off. They're going to make the movie, and then there'll be a Justice League movie, which will have everybody in it, but no, they're making solo films, so they're using the reverse formula, in a way, of what Marvel's done by having individual movies and establishing the characters and then making a group film. DC has agreed to do a shared universe, and they're doing kind of an opposite way by taking their two franchise players, Batman and Superman, putting them in a movie together, and then branching out from there. So it's going to be a mini Justice League movie, from what it sounds like. And then on the strength of Batman v Superman, all these other characters are going to get their own films. And I'm not sure what happens first, but I think Wonder Woman will be out first, and then a Justice League movie, and then maybe the spin-off characters. I'm not really sure how they're playing that out. But regardless, a lot of movies are going into production. I think Justice League goes into production this year. And Wonder Woman, I think, is... It's knee-deep. It's already knee-deep in filming. So, like, what's going to happen here is pretty phenomenal. You know, DC went from, well, we might, to all of a sudden, all of these movies are in, you know, production, pre-production, post-production. It's like, where'd this come from? All of a sudden, I don't know what changed over at Warner Brothers, but they have, and it maybe it's a bit of a, holy crap, like, Marvel's doing this, and they're doing really well, and, you know, DC's characters are longer established, better known, in a lot of respects, so, like, what the hell, you know, what the hell's going on here? So, anyway, Batman v Superman, am I going to go see it? Yeah, I can't believe it's here. I can't believe it got made. I'm just so used to DC movies taking so much longer than anything. And then we're finally there. It's finally going to be happening. It's pretty freaking cool. Am I looking forward to seeing it? Yeah. Am I going to be impressed with it? I don't care. I'm going to be impressed with it. And that's my 2 cents. That's kind of what I think. So anyway... that's the part two of the podcast. I thought I was going to be able to run a little bit longer on it, but really looking forward to seeing Batman v Superman. I think it's going to be freaking awesome. I don't think comic book movies are done. I think the thing that everyone has learned is if you make a quality film, it doesn't matter what it's about. Quality films bring viewership in. Anyway, this is Seanorama. Talk to you next time on the download from the road. Seanorama, talk to you next time on the download from the road.